boys as far away as New Guinea. The tin to which the postscript refers is the willow-lidded cake tin, thousands of which were manufactured by a Melbourne company during World War II. The boys who received these cakes were sent to New Guinea with no promises of safety, and 7,000 of them didn't come home. 7,000. Chapter 1. The last time Jodie was in Clarence, she met a boy and fell in love. You know, the usual stuff. She had her heart broken too, in case you're wondering. The whole process took about 4 minutes. A waterfall and a rock pool had been involved, and a heroic rescue. And even though a decade and a half had passed since then, she'd never forgotten the breathless moment she was scooped by a boy from deep, scary, ink-black water and brought back up to the sun. Had she been 15, 16 maybe? She was young, is the point. And she was naive and wide-eyed and all those sweet, vulnerable things that shy teenage girls are when they're suddenly clasped, bosom to chest, to a handsome boy with laughing brown eyes, no shirt, and soaking wet boardies. The heartbreak wasn't his fault. She knew that now. He'd done nothing more than save her from drowning, set her on her feet, and return to his friends. Hero boy hadn't even known her name, let alone understood she'd been daydreaming about having a summer holiday romance with a boy since forever, and he was the Clarence local she'd chosen for the role. The hurt and humiliation were all in her head. But at the time, watching him walk away like he'd not even noticed she was a girl? Yeah, it felt fatal. She gave her shoulders a roll and stretched her fingers where they'd been clamped on the steering wheel. Driving back into the small country town after all these years had made her mind wander back to a time when she'd thrown words like fatal around for the sheer drama of it. Teenager stuff. She knew better now. Jodie rubbed her chest and blinked rapidly and put a little pressure on her car brakes to pull over to the side of the short street that marked the centre of town. She was older now. She knew what heartbreak really felt like. What fatal really felt like. She knew, but she wished she didn't know, because knowing had been brutal. She pulled away from the curb, keeping her car at a snail's pace as she began inspecting the passing houses of Lillipilli Street through the dusty windscreen. Not that there were many. A few brick, a few fibro, a few weatherboard. The trees and grass and shrubs of the front gardens were such a light green compared with the silvers and sages of the southern gardens back home. After all these years, would she even recognise the house where her great-aunt lived? Oh, of course. There, a blue-painted weatherboard cottage showing its age. A rickety fence of rounded yellow palings marked the front, reminding Jodie a little of horse teeth. The shrubs lining the front path were pruned and tidyish, but dandelions growing up through the grass in front of the house and out on the verge near the road made the place look like mowing was a few days overdue. Three wide plank steps leading up to the bullnose veranda looked like they'd recently been replaced. A sturdy chrome handrail, not at all in keeping with the country charm of the house, shone in the morning sun. Old and new. She'd just been expecting old. She'd just been wanting old, in fact. She'd spent the long drive north making wishful bets with herself. If Carol's house looks exactly like it did when I was a kid, then maybe I'll feel like a kid again while I'm here. Maybe I'll remember what that little word, happy, feels like. But Carol's house had some new amid the old, which was telling her that wishful bets had been false hope. No surprises there.